The Gospel of John, chapter 11. We ended about verse 37. That's where we want to pick up at in our study this morning. But I want to go back and read in the context, because all of this fits together. We'll pick up about verse 21. Then Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is to come into the world." And when she had said these things, she went her way and secretly called Mary, her sister, saying, "The teacher has come and is calling for you." As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the town, but was in the place where Martha met him. Then the Jews who were with her in the house, and comforting her when they saw that Mary rose up quickly and went out, followed her, saying, "She is going to the tomb to weep there." Then when Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Therefore, when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her weeping, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." And some of them said, "Could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept this man from dying?" In this context, of course, Jesus has come to the place where Lazarus, Mary, and Martha lived, and where Lazarus is dead and has been put in a cave on this occasion, having been dead now for 4 days and in the tomb. Of course, when he comes for the purpose of raising Lazarus from the dead. Back in chapter 11 and verse 4, Jesus said, "This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God." That is, it's not about death. It's about the glory of God. That is, it's about displaying or manifesting the glory of God. That is, when Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead, his glory, his honor, his majesty will be manifested as God in the flesh. We noted that back in John 1 and in verse 14, as well as in John chapter 2 when he performed the first miracle, that when he performed such miracles, it manifested his glory. It esteemed him as God in the flesh. And that's what's going to happen on this occasion. Of course, these whom he loves dearly, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, believe in him, but their faith is growing. It's developing. You might say it's budding and flowering out, like the faith of the apostles. Of course, they're true and, you might say, complete faith in him did not come about until after his own resurrection from the dead. But they continue to grow in their faith in him as the Son of God. And remember, that's the purpose of John writing this account, John 20, verse 30 and 31. And Jesus performed these miracles to cause people to believe. It furthered their faith in him, not as just the Christ, the anointed, the long-awaited Messiah who was to come, but it confirmed their faith in him as the Son of God, as deity. And so on this occasion, as the Jews, as people are gathered together with Martha and Mary in their home, and comforting them, as we mentioned in our last study, they engaged in a ceremony of about 7 days in length when one died. During this particular period of time, the Jews buried those who died on the same day they died. And then 6 to 7 days after that, they mourned. And so Martha, of course, goes out to meet Jesus as he comes to the place where they live. And she said to him, "If you had been here, my brother would not have died." Verse 21. Well, when Mary comes out to meet Jesus, She makes the same statement. If he had been here, my brother would not have died, in verse 32. They were scolding Jesus. They believed in him, as verse 27 indicates, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God." But their faith is being confirmed, you might say. It's being furthered. They did believe, but they didn't believe that he was truly deity. They didn't believe that he was God in the flesh. And that's the purpose of Jesus performing these miracles, to get them to understand that he is sent from God, that he is the Son of God, that he is deity, God in the flesh. We'll see that as we further read and study in our text. Of course, all the people on this occasion ask in verse 37, could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind, and that took place back in chapter 9, remember, also have kept this man from dying? Yes, he could have kept him from dying. But he can also raise the dead. As a matter of fact, Martha, even though the statement that Jesus makes in verse 25 and verse 26, and then she makes the confession that he is the Christ, the Son of God, she doesn't fully understand him as being the resurrection and life. Remember, she thought if he had been here, he would not have died. But Jesus could have spoken the word where he was at, and he could have lived. He didn't have to be present. And even with him present, though he is dead, he shall live. So there's not complete understanding in regard to who Jesus is. All of these things will answer the questions that they have. If he had been here, could he have kept him from dying? He didn't have to be there. But he's there now, and he can raise him from the dead. He can do more than just heal him. Verse 38 of John 11. Then Jesus again groaned in himself, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. And Jesus said, take away the stone. Then Jesus again groaned in himself. We saw that word groaned back up in verse 33. Therefore, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews came with her weeping, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. He groaned. Actually, that word groaned in the Greek has reference to being angry. It's not just the ideal of angry, though sometimes when people die, we sometimes express anger because they've died. But he expresses sorrow here too. Some of the versions render it deep sorrow or deep grief instead of groaned. In verse 33, who came with her weeping, he groaned. He had deep sorrow in the spirit and was troubled. It wasn't the fact that he had just deep sorrow. Most of the versions in German and other languages render it with the idea of the word angry. He was very angry. Why was Jesus angry, though? If the word could be translated angry, and some translators translate it that way, why would Jesus have been angry? Well, perhaps he was angry at the fact that they didn't really believe that he could raise him from the dead, that he had to be present in order to raise him from the dead, that here these Jews are mourning over the loss of Lazarus, but yet the same Jews are going to report him raising Lazarus from the dead to the Pharisees, and they're going to seek to put him to death. Perhaps all of this unbelief causes him to groan and be troubled. Like, here I am among these people, and they do not see me as the Son of God. And so again, in verse 38, Jesus again groaned in himself, came to the tomb. Note this, it was a cave. It was a cave. Came to the tomb, it was a cave. What does that mean, came to the tomb, it was a cave? Well, it was not just a vertical hole in the ground like we bury people today, but it was a cave. Perhaps a cave that was made by nature, or one that had been carved out. It was a cave. And it's a cave now, and it will be a cave after he's resurrected from the dead, because it's not really a tomb. Because Jesus is going to speak of Lazarus as one who is present but just asleep and not really dead. Verse 38, Jesus again groaned in himself, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it, like the stone that was rolled against the door of the tomb in which Jesus was put in. The stone was put there to keep wild animals, wild beasts, from going in and dragging off the dead bodies. And so Jesus said, take away the stone. And Martha, the sister of him who was dead, said to him, Lord, by this time there's a stench, for he has been dead 4 days. By this time there's a stench. By this time the dead body is emitting a strong odor of decay, because he's been dead and in the tomb for 4 days. But you see, the morning time period is still going on. And so, for those people who would say, well, Lazarus really wasn't dead, everybody present understood him to be dead. His family understood him to be dead, and even those who were mourning with the family understood him to be dead. So indeed, this man, Lazarus, is dead and has been dead now and in the tomb for 4 days. Verse 40, John 11, Jesus said to her, did I not say to you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God? Now, we don't read that exact statement in this chapter where Jesus said those exact words to her. But on this occasion, when Jesus said, take away the stone, Martha, again, like she did before, kind of scolds Jesus. She had scolded him when she said, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And now she says, by this time there's a stench, for he's been dead 4 days. It doesn't make sense. And so Jesus said to her, did I not say to you? But he did not say these exact words, as we read in the context, but he may have said them, and John simply did not record them. Or he may have said this in such a way that it is to be understood that what he had said back in verse 25 and 26 is what is under consideration. I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? That may have some connection to it. Did I not say to you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God? So she's going to see the glory of God. There's that word glory again. She's going to see the glory of God. She's going to see his brilliance, his shining, his radiance. No, she's going to see his honor, his esteem, his majesty. She's going to see the glory of God displayed or manifested in Jesus Christ when he brings about the resurrection of Lazarus. That's what she's going to see. But note this, did I not say to you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God? If you would believe. So there's a condition. She'll not be able to see the glory of God. She'll not be able to see God manifested in Jesus Christ if she does not believe. So we might say that even though these miracles were performed to cause people to believe, in a sense you had to believe before you could see the manifestation of God in the flesh. There was a lot of people who saw the resurrection of Lazarus that didn't believe. A lot of people that saw the miracles during this occasion of the life of Jesus who did not believe. So they need to believe that he is the Christ, the Son of God, that he's deity in the flesh, and they'll see the glory of God. They'll see him manifested as God. Verse 41, John 11. Then they took away the stone. Who took away the stone? Well, perhaps those who were there present with Mary and Martha on this occasion, some who were mourning with them. So they took away the stone from the place where the dead man was laying. Note, it doesn't say where Lazarus was laying, but where the dead man was laying. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have, note this, have heard me past tense. Well, God had heard him in times past. Perhaps when he heard of the sickness of Lazarus, maybe he prayed to the Father as well. We simply do not know. But Father, I thank you that you have heard me. That is past tense, not now, but you've heard me in times past. Verse 42. And I know that you always hear me. But because of the people who were standing by, I said this, that they may believe that you sent me. So this is why he's speaking to the Father on this occasion. As he lifts up his eyes and he said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me, and I know that you always hear me. But because of the people who are standing by. Now this word translated people here, you ought to pencil or pen in your Bible and make a note. The word people here is literally crowd or multitude, and it's translated that way in some places. So there's actually a crowd of people here. There's actually a multitude of people here on this occasion. Why wouldn't they be? Well, because they've heard of the miracles that Jesus has performed in times past. And there are many who are familiar with Lazarus and Mary and Martha and who are here present on this occasion. So there is a crowd of people. There's just not just a handful. And that's perhaps why the word is used. But because of the people who are standing by, there's a multitude, a crowd of people who are assembled on this occasion. And so because of this crowd of people, or multitude of people who are standing by, Jesus says this, that, in order that, or so that they may believe that you sent me. So Jesus is speaking to the Father in the presence of this crowd or this multitude, so they can recognize and realize that when he calls forth Lazarus from the grave, he is doing this by the authority or by the power of God. So he does this and speaks out loud so people can hear that they may believe that you sent me. Verse 43, John 11. Now when he had said these things, he cried with a loud voice. He cried. That is, he called out. That is, the volume of his voice went up. Lazarus, come forth. Now, we could take this back to John 5 that we noted earlier in our study of this chapter already, John 5 and in verse 22. John 5 and in verse 22, for the Father judges no one but has committed all judgment to the Son, that all should honor the Son just as they honor the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. Most assuredly I say to you, he who hears my word and believes in him who sent me has everlasting life and shall not come into judgment, as passed from death into life. Most assuredly I say to you, the hour is coming, and now is, when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted Son to have life in himself. So he calls out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he who had died came out bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to him, loose him and let him go. He who had died, again, describes Lazarus by the phrase, he who had died, instead of using his name. He came out bound hand and foot. Now I want you to think about this. Perhaps you've seen pictures in times past. During this particular period of time, the Jewish bodies might not have been wrapped like a mummy, but that we see from mummies preserved in Egypt, but in a very similar way. And the bodies were wrapped for a number of different reasons, in grave clothes, wrapped in cloth. A lot of times, because the Jews didn't have an elaborate system of preserving the body, they would wrap one layer of grave clothes around the body and then put all kind of spices and perfumes in there and then wrap another layer. But the point I seek to make here in this, he came out bound hand and foot. If you could imagine your body and if you could see a little baby that is tightly swaddled in a blanket, it can't move. But if you would imagine a body and that is swaddled, that is, that has died, and it is wrapped, and it's wrapped tightly from head to foot. And there's a lot of different reasons for that, not go into it. But he comes out of the tomb like that. Can you imagine how much energy one would have to exert to be able to get up and bounce out? Because his legs are tied together. He's wrapped tightly together. He has to be loosed. They have to untie him, unrestrain his body. But yet he has the energy, he has the strength, he has the power to come out of the tomb. And so it's easy to see that he is alive. It's easy to see that he has been brought to life, because there's a great deal of life being expressed in the fact that he is bound hand and foot when he comes out of the tomb. And his face was wrapped with a cloth. Even his face, to indicate that his entire body was bound and restrained. Some people will say, well, why did they wrap the face? Well, one of the reasons was to keep the mouth from opening. Well, what was the purpose of that? There's a lot of different reasons again. But the body was wrapped tightly. And Jesus said to him, loose him and let him go. Now, why couldn't Jesus loose him? He could have. Why couldn't Jesus have removed the stone? He could have. But he allows man to do what man can do. And Jesus does that which man cannot do. Man cannot raise the dead. But man could remove the stone from the cave. Man could release the wrappings around the body. But man could not raise the dead. Verse 45, John 11. Then many of the Jews who had come to Mary and had seen the things Jesus did, note this, believed in him. Many of the Jews, we saw that phrase, the Jews earlier in this context as well. The Jews under consideration, of course, are those who've been antagonistic toward Jesus. Those who've been hostile toward him. Those who have an association with the religious leaders, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, those who make up the Sanhedrin Council. They were there comforting Mary and Martha. They were religiously minded people. They were concerned about the loss of people's loved ones, and they were expressing their sympathy to Mary and Martha on this occasion. So many of the Jews who had come to Mary and had seen the things Jesus did, they believed in him. Again, they believed into him. Now, why did they believe? Well, because he raised the dead. Verse 46, but some of them went away to the Pharisees and told them the things Jesus did. Some of them went away to the Pharisees. Why? Well, because the Pharisees wanted to know where this Jesus was and what he was doing. Chapter 9 and verse 22. His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that he was the Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. They wanted to know about this man Jesus and what he was always constantly doing. And they had already threatened people in regard to believing in him as being the Christ and confessing him as the Christ. They were hostile toward him. So some of these Jews that were there for the purpose of comforting and consoling Mary and Martha, when they see what Jesus has done, they bring this news to the Pharisees and told them the things that Jesus did. Then the chief priest and the Pharisees gathered a council and said, what shall we do? For this man works many signs. The chief priest, note that, the chief priest, plural. Chief priest is high priest, singular. But here it's plural because there were many chief priests, that is, some of high priests who were high priests in times past and their family members. These were members of the Sanhedrin Council. Most of them, perhaps, during this time, Sadducees. Then the chief priests and the Pharisees, they gathered a council. That is, they brought the council of the Sanhedrin together. These are the ones who make up that council in Jerusalem. We might refer to as the Supreme Court of the land in religious matters and political matters as well. So the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered a council and said, what shall we do? What shall we do? More literally, what are we doing? What are we doing? We're not doing anything right now, and look what's happening. They've just let Jesus go up to this point and period of time. Oh, they sought to seize him on other occasions, but they basically just let it go. So what shall we do? Not what shall we do in the future, but what are we doing right now? What we're doing right now is not working because this man, note they'll not even bring themselves to call him Jesus, for this man works many signs. If we let him alone like this, everyone will believe in him. Now that's not a true statement. Everyone won't believe in him, regardless of how many miracles he performs. Even if he should raise from the dead himself, they'll not believe in him. But nonetheless, they think everybody will come to believe in him. Now, what will they come to believe? They'll come to believe that he is the Christ. They'll come to believe that he is the Messiah. That he is the one who is to come to liberate them from Roman oppression and rule and reign like David did on the throne in Jerusalem. That's what they'll believe about him. Remember, on other occasions, they sought to take him and make him a king. Back in chapter 6 and in verse 14. Then those men, when they had seen the sign that Jesus did, said, "This is truly the prophet who has come into the world." Therefore, when Jesus perceived that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, he departed again to the mountain by himself alone. So this is what they believe about him, that he is indeed the Christ. Again, the Christ to them was the long-awaited Messiah. It was the one who was to come like David, who would liberate them from Roman oppression and bring the kingdom back to the children of Israel. And so, if we let him alone like this, everyone will believe in him. That's what they're going to believe about him. And the Romans will come, note this, and take away both our place and nation. So the Romans will come and take away our place. Our place here refers to our city. The Romans will come and take away. The word take away means to destroy. The Romans will come and destroy our city and our nation. Now, they don't recognize and realize how prophetic their words are, because that's exactly what's going to happen, is it not? Here, they want to put Jesus to death to keep the Romans from coming and destroying their city and their nation. But actually, in putting him to death, the Romans are going to come and destroy the city and the nation. Do you see how backwards their thinking really is? They think that if we leave him alone, if we let him live and people believe that he's the Messiah, then the Romans will come. No, the Romans are actually going to come because they put him to death. That's why they're going to come. So if we let him alone like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and the nation. They'll destroy our city and our people. And one of them, Caiaphas, being the high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all." One of them, Caiaphas, being the high priest that year. Caiaphas served as high priest until about 36 A.D., when he was deposed by the proconsul Vitellius. He served about 18 years. There were many high priests during this particular period of time. Under the old law, they were supposed to serve for life, but of course, during this time, the high priesthood went to the highest bidder. And so as long as you pleased the Romans and always sided with them, you would be in power. Annas, of course, his father-in-law, was high priest before this. Sometimes he's mentioned as being high priest because high priests who were deposed even still had a lot of power and authority. But I want you to notice something important about this statement that is made here. One of them, Caiaphas, being high priest that year. That phrase, "that year," is going to be used more than once on this occasion. That year. Caiaphas was high priest that year. Now, what's the significance of that? After the death of Christ, is Caiaphas going to be high priest? Well, he is up to 36 A.D. But note this, Caiaphas is high priest that year. After the death of Christ, Christ becomes high priest. They don't recognize and realize that, but he is going to become high priest when he is put to death for the sins of mankind. So one of them, Caiaphas, being high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all, nor do you consider that it is expedient, that it's profitable, that it's advantageous for us, that is the Jewish people, that one man should die for the people, and not that the whole nation should perish." So Caiaphas, the high priest at that time, who was over the Sanhedrin council, says, we need to recognize and realize we can put this man to death. Only one man can die. Or the whole nation can perish or be destroyed by the Romans if we let him alone. So if we let him alone, everybody's going to believe that he's the long-awaited Messiah. They're going to believe that he's the new king, and the Romans are going to come and destroy our city and destroy our nation because we're trying to self-rule again. But Caiaphas doesn't realize that he himself is prophesying on this occasion. So it's profitable or expedient for us that one man should die, note this, for on behalf of the people, and not that the whole nation should perish or be destroyed. Now this he did not say on his own, and authority has been added by the translators. This he did not say on his own, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus, note this, would die for the nation of Israel, die for the people of Israel. And not for that nation only, but also that he would gather together in one, that is in one family, the children of God who were scattered abroad. So though Caiaphas was trying to preserve his own nation through putting Jesus to death, he was going to bring about the destruction of his own nation. But also through the process of putting Jesus to death in order to preserve his own nation, he's going to save his nation spiritually. So all the family of God would be gathered together, both Jew and Gentile, in Christ. Verse 53, then from that day on they plotted to put him to death. From that day on they plotted to put him to death. They planned to put him to death. That's the plan. The Sanhedrin Council has hatched the plan now. We're going to put this man to death because the people believe that he's the long-awaited king, the Messiah who's to come. And if we just let him go, that's going to happen, and then the Romans are going to come to destroy our city and destroy our nation. So in order to keep the Romans from coming to destroy their city and their nation, they've hatched the plan to put him to death. Verse 54, therefore Jesus no longer walked openly among the Jews, but went from there into the country near the wilderness to a city called Ephraim, and there remained with his disciples. Now, exactly where that city was, many believe it to be northeast of the city of Jerusalem. Some say 12 to 16 miles, others say as far away as 20 miles. The exact location is unknown. But nonetheless, Jesus no longer walked openly, note this, among the Jews, among those who were hostile and antagonistic toward him, because he knew they were seeking an occasion to seize him and put him to death. So on this occasion, he stays away from them. He stays away from them until his hour or his time is just right. And so that time or that hour is very near. It's very near. Verse 55, and the Passover of the Jews was near, note that, was near. It was close by. It was at hand. Here's that same phrase we see in our study in the book of Revelation. And people read that in the book of Revelation and they say, well, when John said in John 1 and verse 3, the time is near. And then later on in chapter 20, the time is at hand. Same word. Here we see the Passover was near. Well, how near? It was in the lifetime of these people who were then living. That's how near it was. Not only was it that near, it was within the year on this occasion. That's how near it was. It wasn't hundreds of years down the road. It wasn't thousands of years down the road. It was near. It was close by. It was about to take place. So the Passover of the Jews was near. Now this is the third occasion that the Passover is mentioned in the Gospel of John. This is where we get the idea of the ministry of the life of Christ, that is 3 or 3.5 years. As he ministered, as he went about preaching and teaching the gospel of the kingdom, he did that for about 3 years. Now, the first occasion we read about the Passover was in chapter 2, verse 13 and verse 23. That was the first Passover during his ministry. The second one was mentioned in chapter 6 and in verse 4. Now this is the third Passover. Remember, the Passover was the time when the Jews kept the feast of Passover that God instituted when he brought the children out of Egyptian bondage. And all through the ages they've kept that feast. Well, it's during this Passover that Jesus is going to be put to death for the people. He is the Passover lamb or Passover sacrifice. So verse 55. And the Passover of the Jews was near, and many went up from the country to Jerusalem before Passover to purify themselves. So many of the Jews would travel out of the countryside and go up to Jerusalem, that is, go up in elevation to the city of Jerusalem to purify themselves before the Passover. Purify themselves, that is, to make themselves clean, to wash their clothes and to purify the flesh, ceremonial purification, so they could go to the temple, so they could participate in the Passover sacrifice and Passover meal and so forth. So they would purify themselves for that reason. Verse 56. Then they sought Jesus. That is, all of these people who come out of the countryside would be looking for Jesus. Why? Because he's well known by this time. Then they sought Jesus and spoke among themselves as they stood in the temple. Now this is what they would say. What do you think? That he will not come to the feast? That's right. Many of them are saying, don't think that he's not coming. He comes every year to this feast. As a matter of fact, he's a devout Jew. He comes to all the feasts that the law requires. He'll come. He'll be here. So people are looking for him. They're waiting for him to come to the feast of Passover. Verse 57. Now both the chief priest and the Pharisees, note this, so here's the council of the Sanhedrin that's already planned to put him to death. Now both the chief priest and the Pharisees had given a command that if anyone knew where he was, he should report it that they might seize him. So anyone who knows where he is, they need to report it. They need to declare it, make it manifest so they can seize him and so they can put him to death. That's John chapter 11. Questions or comments? We're out of time. All right, we'll pick up at John chapter 12, next Lord's Day morning. Thank you very much for your kind attention.